Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Foreclosure sales on the rise, foreclosure suspended by two big banks. There are two interesting developments today in the nation's foreclosure crisis. New statistics out this morning show a quarter of all U.S. home sales in the second quarter were of homes in some stage of foreclosure. And J.P. Morgan Chase is suspending all foreclosures in 23 states, including New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, adding GMAC, which is doing this, because they may be using sleazy or illegal practices to get hundreds of thousands of people out of their homes without due process. So we will talk about both things now with Rick Sharga, Senior Vice President at RealtyTrack, the housing data provider which came up with the foreclosed home sales data. Their numbers about foreclosures and foreclosure purchases out today and making big news around the country. Hi, Rick. Welcome to WNYC.
Pleasure to be here.
Homes in some stage of foreclosure are accounting for much more of the total home sales market than they were before?
Yes and no. In a normal market, we'd be looking at probably less than 5% of all residential sales being foreclosure homes. So, yeah, it's much bigger than normal. We're actually a little bit down from the first quarter on a percentage basis. So we had almost a quarter of a million homes sold that were either in foreclosure or already repossessed by the banks. But we saw the percentage go down because of a spike in new home sales due to the home buyer tax credit.
How many foreclosed home sales is this? Just the raw number so people get a sense of the enormity of how many foreclosed on homes or homes in some stage of foreclosure have been sold in the United States in the last 3 months.
248,534 houses, to be exact, that were either in foreclosure or it had already been repossessed by the banks. We're on a pace to see probably just short of a million foreclosure homes sold this year.
And there are big differences in different parts of the country.
Right.
Talk about that and where New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut fit in.
New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut really are toward the low end in terms of foreclosure sales. You're looking at states where the highest percentages of foreclosure sales. You're going to look at places like Nevada. 56% of their sales are foreclosure related.
Let's just stop and linger on that number for a minute. 56% of residential real estate sales in the state of Nevada, more than half, are homes in foreclosure.
And that's actually better than the previous quarter. It was over 65%. What we found in states like that is that such a high percentage of homes sold are in foreclosure that it causes the home prices of all the non-foreclosure properties to drop pretty significantly, too. So it really takes the whole market down once you're over 60%.
And in extreme contrast, in New York, your number is just over 7% of sold homes were in some stage of foreclosure. So quite a disparity between New York and Nevada, for example.
New York also has one of the longest foreclosure cycles in the country. If you're in foreclosure in Nevada, it's likely you'll lose your house within probably 150 days. In New York, the process normally takes 450 days.
And if because of more legal protections?
More legal procedures, if not protections. But there are some new legislation, new laws that are in effect right now that have extended the period even longer. So we may not have seen everything we're going to see in New York yet, but we'll get there at some point.
Arizona had the second highest number with 47% of homes sold in some stage of foreclosure. And California, not far behind, in third place with 43% of sold homes in foreclosure. And in a way, it's one thing to think about Nevada, which you might characterize as a specialized market mm-hmm. with Las Vegas and then otherwise a small state. But California, 43% of homes sold were in foreclosure.
And a lot of your listeners probably either know somebody or have property themselves in Florida. Florida, also very high, 37% of the sales in Florida were foreclosures.
So, listeners, you can get in on this conversation in various ways. Have you bought or are you seeking foreclosed on homes to buy? If so, what are you finding? What are the communities looking like where the foreclosed on homes are located? Maybe you are a neighbor of one or several homes in any stage of foreclosure on your block or in your immediate neighborhood. What ripple effect is this having on the community, on home values, but on things that are beyond just the monetary value as well. What does this all mean for the country or for your community? 212-433-WNYC for buyers, sellers, neighbors, anyone else. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. As we talk to Rick Sharga, Senior Vice President at Realty Track, the housing data provider. Their numbers about foreclosures and foreclosure purchases in the second quarter of this year making big news. 212-433-9692 or post online to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. And let me ask you, is this good or bad or mixed for the nation as a whole? I mean, the rash of foreclosures is a national tragedy, to be sure, but we also see these many thousands of homes being sold at more affordable prices to other Americans after the housing bubble was pushing prices sky high. So is this the market helping as it hurts, or is that, you know, too much equivalency? How do you see the good or bad of this whole thing?
Well, there's two positive aspects of this. One is, in order for the housing market to recover, we need to get rid of all this distressed inventory. So you've probably heard various people discuss something called a shadow inventory, which is all these distressed properties that will ultimately hit the market. We peg that number at somewhere between 3 and 3.5 million homes that will ultimately go to the market over the next few years.
Talk about that more. What is a shadow inventory?
Okay, right now the banks have about 900,000 properties on their books. Of those, only about 30% are available for sale. So there is an overhang of 600 and some thousand properties the banks have already repossessed that will ultimately come to market.
This is what's also known as toxic assets.
Yes, they're definitely toxic assets. There are about 1.2 million people currently in foreclosure. Of those people, only about 20% have their properties on the market for sale, and there's about 5 million people who are seriously delinquent on their loans, and very few of those are on the market for sale. So at some point, all these properties, or a lot of these properties, are going to make their way into the marketplace. The faster we can get buyers to absorb these, the faster the housing market has a chance to come back.
And the banks are sitting on these homes in the shadow foreclosure markets because they don't want to sell them at the low prices that they would need to go for right now. They're just kind of warehousing them until the prices start going up again?
Not really. Partly it's just volume. They're getting more than they can handle. But there are also some accounting benefits to holding on to these things. The banks right now don't have to mark down the value of these homes until they resell them. So there are, in extreme cases, hundreds of millions of dollars of losses that they can defer by holding back the sale of these properties. We've already set a record for bank closures this year. So a lot of these banks simply don't have the capital position to absorb the losses they would take if they sold the homes.
So I think I may have interrupted a thought that you were getting toward on sort of the good and the bad all these foreclosure sales.
The other aspect is while it is a tragedy when somebody loses their home to a foreclosure, there is an opportunity that springs up. Living in Southern California right now, we see a lot of brush fires. It's sort of nature's way of cleaning house, and it gives you a chance for new growth. So first-time home buyers, people that have been priced out of an overheated housing market, now have an opportunity to come in at a much more affordable level and get a house they might not otherwise have been able to afford.
Let's take some phone calls. Lauren in New Rochelle, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lauren.
Hi, how are you? A quick comment. I was actually looking to buy a home in New Rochelle. It's Rochelle Heights, which is a historic area. We made a couple of offers on homes that were in foreclosure, and a year and a half later, they're still in foreclosure. Yeah. The offers we made at the time were, let's just use numbers. Let's say the house was listed for $700,000. It was boarded up. It had effectively been left by the previous owner. There was furniture and garbage everywhere. We saw some houses that were in terrible disrepair. No plumbing, no electrical, windows completely smashed out, boarded up. So we offered, let's say, $325,000 on a house that was listed for $650,000. And the banks, I think your guest mentioned this, either it's because there's not enough volume, I mean there's too much volume, or the banks don't want to write it down right now. But they wouldn't even consider anything lower than $700,000. And that's true still today, because we went back to take a look and see, I mean, these properties obviously are getting even more dilapidated. The neighborhoods are becoming more dilapidated as they're falling into disrepair. And yet the banks are just sitting there with their hands on their underneath their rear ends.
Yeah, we've heard this story pretty much across the country. What you're saying isn't all that unusual, and in fact, it's gotten so bad that one of the agencies, Fannie Mae, recently put out some instructions threatening to fine its servicers if they don't move more rapidly and more efficiently on these vacant properties. The governmental programs that have been intended to slow down foreclosures really aren't intended to have any effect on the kind of property you're talking about. Those are the properties that both the government and the lenders really should be motivated to try and move.
But yet then the problem is this. We obviously would like to fix the property up.
Right.
And this is, I guess, an aside. If you want to buy a property in New York State in particular, you're looking at around $30,000 in closing costs when you include lawyers' fees, one point for the mortgage broker, taxation, all said and done. So if you're going to buy a house for $400,000 here, you're spending $25,000, $30,000 in fees up front, and you know it makes it that much more difficult for people to buy a home. And if you're going to do an FHA, they're now taking, apparently their fee has gone up to 2.25% up front plus approximately $200 a month. So even though you would think it's affordable, it's really not unless you have $50,000 just to pay the fees to get in.
Lauren, thank you for your call. We appreciate it. Janet in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hello, Janet.
Hi, I wanted to find out how do you know about foreclosed homes? Because there's a lot of rogue companies out there that say that they can get you here or there with houses. And then the other thing is, once you buy a foreclosed home, even before you buy it, how do you know if they have liens on them? What's the best route to take? Thank you.
Thank you. Rick?
If you're a first-time home buyer or have not bought a foreclosure property before, your best bet really is to work with an experienced real estate professional, a real estate agent who specializes in foreclosures. Websites like ours, actually we have about 300 people out in the field who collect information on these foreclosure properties. That's how we find out about them. And then we add other missing details about the properties to them. But we really suggest for people that are just starting out that you work with somebody, either a real estate agent or a real estate lawyer, who can help you take a look at some of that missing information that you're talking about, like tax liens, mechanics liens, second liens. I've heard far too many stories of people who've gone to an auction, a sheriff's sale, and bought a property that was falling apart because they couldn't inspect it, or people that have bought a second lien thinking it was the mortgage to the house and turned out it wasn't. So that's what I would suggest. You can find information online on sites like ours, but for just starting out, I'd say work with a realtor.
Janet, thank you very much. Now, I think one related thing we're seeing in our region, at least this is what I've heard, is that even though foreclosed on homes are cheaper in particular hard-hit neighborhoods like Crown Heights and Bedford-Stuyvesant, buyers are going elsewhere in the city for foreclosures that cost somewhat more, leaving these neighborhoods with, you know, longer-term vacant home issues and community issues as a result. Are you familiar with that, either in this particular case or as a trend with its implications?
This typically happens in a foreclosure cycle. It's just now happening in this cycle because this cycle was a little different than previous ones. But typically a foreclosure cycle starts after you have an economic downturn, which is followed by unemployment. Unemployment leads to people not having a check to make their mortgage payment with. And it tends to happen first at people at the lower ends of the economic scale who have the least money. And they tend to have the houses that ultimately are in the most disrepair. I think what you're ultimately going to see is the government set aside about $6 billion in something they call a neighborhood stabilization program that's being made available to municipal governments to go in, purchase back some of these foreclosed properties in the hardest hit parts of the city, and either convert them into low-cost housing or, if they're beyond repair, you know, basically bulldozing them and making them go away.
Frank in West Babylon, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hey, Brian, how are you?
Good, thank you.
I have a quick question. I'm looking to buy a house, and everyone, I hear on the news, you know, that the economy's bad, and it's based upon housing prices and how high housing prices, you know, they're coming down. It's a bad thing. I think it's a great thing, and I think they should be coming down even more, because I look at houses, people are asking $500,000 for houses on these suburban areas on Long Island. I wouldn't pay more than $350, even $250 for them. So I just want to know what the caller's take is on that kind of a situation.
For our guest, Rick Sharger from Realty Track.
You know, at the end of the day, a purchase decision is what you're willing to pay and what somebody's willing to sell for. And most economists that we talk to think that there are certain pockets of the country where home prices are still a little higher than they probably ought to be, given income levels and market demand. So I wouldn't be surprised to see certain parts of the region here see a little bit more price depreciation. But to get down from $500,000 to $250,000 or $350,000 doesn't seem really likely at this
point. There may be a generational shift in wealth implied here. So many people who've built up equity in their homes are getting hit so hard by the sudden decline in value. That's where the tragedy is for so many American families, you know, as well as, of course, those who got saddled with mortgages that they couldn't afford and found themselves underwater and being made homeless now, et cetera, et cetera. But maybe there's a whole younger generation of Americans that can start with cheaper homes than they would have had to start with before.
That's the hope. The fear in the industry is that the luster of home ownership has dimmed significantly because of all this foreclosure activity. And we may have to do something to encourage these folks to actually put the money down and buy a house.
Now, I want to get to the other foreclosure story in the news today, and that is J.P. Morgan Chase now adding its name to GMAC in suspending all foreclosures in 23 states, including New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, apparently because of their own foreclosure practices. Are you familiar with this?
Yes.
So, for example, reading from the New York Times business section today, this is the lead story in the Times business section today, it says, in a sign that the entire foreclosure process is coming under pressure, a second major mortgage lender said that it was suspending court cases against defaulting homeowners so it could review its legal practices. I'm going to skip ahead here. In their zeal to process hundreds of thousands of foreclosures as quickly as possible and get those properties on the market, they employed people who could sign documents so quickly, they popularized a new term for them, robo-signers. And in depositions taken by lawyers for embattled homeowners, the robo-signers said they or their team, as I turn the page here, had signed 10,000 or more foreclosure affidavits a month. Now that haste has come back to haunt them. The affidavits and foreclosures attest that the preparer personally reviewed the files, which those workers acknowledge they had no time to do. So this is to say what? That these banks, and if they're doing it, others are probably doing it, are in such a rush to kick people out of their homes that they're hiring teams of quote-unquote robo-signers to sign documents saying that a foreclosure is proper when they haven't really determined that?
Taking a half a step back, I think it's probably a bit rough to characterize the lenders as being in a rush to kick people out of their homes. And frankly, they don't really want much more inventory back because they have more than they can handle. The volume is what the issue is. In a normal year, you might have had 500,000 foreclosure notices go out. We're going to have 3.2 million go out this year. So the processes these lenders and servicers had in place just didn't keep pace with the volume. And for some reason, they didn't either staff up or put better processes in place to handle it. It's almost insane to think about somebody trying to sign 10,000 documents in a month. And then stripping them off in batches to a notary to notarize when they're supposed to be done, you know, one at a time, in real time. So, you know, obviously the process broke. Obviously there's paperwork issues. The industry, in this part of the industry, has been very sloppy about its paperwork. There was a case in Cleveland last year where Deutsche Bank was declined the right to foreclose on a property because they couldn't produce a document saying that they actually owned it. So it's a lot of past ills coming back to haunt the industry right now.
Now, you say they don't want to kick people out of their homes, but if they're signing 10,000 foreclosure documents a month, these affidavits, they're in a rush to do something.
I think I'm probably just sort of pushing a little bit back on the characterization. The folks that are getting these notices are at the very least 90 days past due on their loans. And we all know somebody who's been in a house for a year and hasn't made a payment, still hasn't gotten a foreclosure notice. So this isn't a question of the banks and servicers taking shortcuts to expedite foreclosures and get people quickly out of their homes. It's sloppy paperwork. It's unforgivable. But it's not a Machiavellian scheme to throw people out on the street.
Carrie in Bedminster, you're on WNYC. Hi, Carrie.
Yes, hi. Thank you very much for taking my call. I really appreciate it.
Sure.
I'm one of those people who has a mortgage with Chase, and I'm one of those people that Chase has made shortcuts because I lost my job. I was unemployed for 3 months during the winter. All my credit cards suddenly went up to 29%, and I'd been paying them on time. Everything got on top of me, and I just couldn't make my mortgage payment. I'm now employed. They've foreclosed on my home. I can make my mortgage payments. They've sent my mortgage payments back to me. They will not take my mortgage payments. They said that my house is in foreclosure. And quite frankly, I don't know what to do. I've sent them piles and piles and piles of paperwork. I've returned everything they've sent to me. When they send you the letters, they say, help's out there. Don't lose your home. This is your home. We can help. They're not going to help. And this is Chase. I used my mortgage was with Washington Mutual, and of course now Chase owns Washington Mutual. There's no help out there. Don't kid yourself. These banks are not trying to help anybody. I'm surrounded by people that work in the banking industry. They're laughing their heads off. They're making more money now than they've ever made. They say that it's not in the bank's interest to help anybody modify a loan or stay in their home. And I don't know what I'm going to do. I've put $600,000 into my home, and my home's not even worth now what I owe on it.
Rick, why talk to Carrie. Why would a bank, since you were saying they're not in a rush to get people out of their homes, and I don't expect you to know the details of this case, obviously, but why would a bank refuse to take her mortgage payments to let her get out of foreclosure if she now has a job and is able to resume payments?
There is absolutely no good reason for a bank to do what they're doing to her right now.
It's Chase Manhattan, and they're doing it.
What do they say to you when you offer to, assuming your story, you know, checks out, what do they say when you offer to make your mortgage payments once again and they say, no, too late, your home is in foreclosure? What do they say to you as a reason?
The home's already gone through foreclosure through the courts.
So has the bank already sold the property off?
No, I'm still living in the property, but I was advised by somebody who actually works for Chase to put my mortgage payments in a savings account. He said because that when it actually comes to the point of arranging for a sheriff's sale on my home, that I can go to the court, hopefully, and say, look, I was prepared to pay my mortgage. I've been putting my mortgage payments in a savings account. This is what I have. But what Chase is saying to me is that unless I can make up the 4 months that I was delinquent on my mortgage, they're not interested. And they've gone ahead. They've had a huge firm, which is a very powerful firm in New Jersey, that went ahead. They foreclosed on me. I did get some very good advice from HUD.
So they want the back payments? It's just about 4 months of back mortgage payments?
Of back mortgage payments, which I can't make because my mortgage is $5,000 a month.
And they won't agree to just put that at the back end of your mortgage and rework the loan?
No, they won't. And I'm currently now working with an attorney in Florida who's trying to stop these banks doing this, and she's going to try and help me. But I'm frantic. I have my 81-year-old mother lives with me. She's hysterical. She thinks the sheriff's going to come and throw us out on the street.
And Carrie, I'm sorry to have to move on, but can you give her any additional advice? It sounds like she is working with people to try to...
She is doing pretty much everything I would have told her to do. The other thing that you might do as kind of a last-ditch effort is you might contact Chuck Schumer's office.
She's in New Jersey.
Oh, okay. Then
should it be her senator?
Go to your senator's office. You might even try Schumer anyway because he's in charge of the Joint Economic Committee, Joint Senate Economic Committee, and they oversee a lot of the banks that are involved in this stuff. He's been at the forefront of foreclosure fighting since day one, and maybe somebody in his staff or your senator's staff can bring some pressure on the bank.
And also, let's take Carrie's number off the air if she wants to give it to us. And see if we can get some kind of other follow-up referral for her. Carrie, good luck to you in that situation. Before you go, on this same story, the suspension of foreclosures by GMAC and JP Morgan Chase is only in the 23 states in which courts have to approve foreclosures.
Correct.
And that includes New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. Does that say that they're still doing these robo-signing affidavits and getting people out of their homes without enough due process? in all the states where the courts don't have to approve the foreclosures because they can.
My understanding of the Chase scenario is that they've basically stopped their foreclosure proceedings, not just in the 23 states, but pretty much across the board. And my other guess is if they haven't, most of these organizations will until they make sure they're being compliant with whatever the regulatory requirements are. Now that this genie's out of the lamp, it's going to be hard to make it go away.
All right. Rick Schugger is Senior Vice President at RealtyTrack, the housing data provider. It's their numbers about foreclosures and foreclosure purchases in the second quarter making news today. And thank you also for talking about the suspension of foreclosures and RoboSigner story with us today.
My pleasure.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We have Andrea Bernstein, WNYC political reporter, coming in next about her visit to Colorado and Pennsylvania in recent days to see how different the politics are in those swing states at this moment than they were when she last visited during the presidential campaign of 2008. Stay with us.